I believe wholeheartedly in the power of design. And I think that a beautiful workplace certainly inspires people.
Forget gimmicky running tracks, beanbags, or the cringeworthy office slide. A well-designed workplace should be creative, sure, but it should also feel professional.
But a really well-designed workplace that is designed to have a meaningful connection to what is important about an organization, how they see themselves. A workplace that's designed to draw meaningful connections between the people and each other and the space is a powerful tool.
David Gulolo is the CEO of Wrapped Studio and was charged with the design of a new Seattle headquarters for the TV firm HBO. We'll take a tour of the new workspace and ask a few questions about the future of office design right here on Section D. Hello and a very warm welcome to Section D, Monocle's weekly design show. I'm your host, Josh Fennett. Also today...
It's not just a building for those who live there, but it's really a building for everyone, for the whole city.
Architect Richard Meyer delivers a verdict on how public space ought to play a larger role in the minds of developers. Plus...
What is interesting is that design is not anymore just to give a shape to object and space, but also to give shapes to concept, to give shape to new logic, and I really like that.
From cage lamps at IKEA to a walk in the Slovenian woods, our mini-series looks at how the Biennial of Design in Ljubljana continues with a word from industrial designer Mitali Krasset. All that coming up right here on Section D on Monocle 24. The way we work is changing fast, but over the past few years, the promises of home offices, beanbags instead of chairs and slides instead of stairs, have proved blissfully far from the mark. Instead, a well-designed workplace understands the needs of its inhabitants and the fact that it needs to be an embassy for the brand it represents. It's a challenge that David Gulolo knows well. As the CEO of California-based Wrapped Studio, he's overseen workplace redesigns for clients with all manner of briefs. So, when the acclaimed television network HBO needed a new headquarters in Seattle, David and the team looked not only at the individual needs of the company's staff, but also, as he tells Monocle's Ed Stocker, riffs on the Pacific Northwest's manufacturing and maritime history.
The project was an interesting one because they had grown up in a second-generation space that was actually a law firm previously. So it was a space that couldn't have been fighting stronger with the way they wanted to work. And really, we tried to get them to remove their comments from reaction to the space that they were in to actually just talking about how they wanted to work, what the touch points were that we should pay attention to, and what was meaningful in their interactions and their process. We also focused on their struggle with interacting outside of their teams. Because they were on multiple floors and spaces that weren't really adjacent to each other and open easily, they had difficulty knowing what each of the teams were doing separate from. So they didn't have a sense of the whole. They had a sense of just the team that they worked within. So the new space is designed very specifically to have all of the corridors enlarged, whiteboards, meeting spaces along those corridors, so informal, impromptu conversations could pop up at any time, in any place. And they had the tools. All engineers need whiteboards everywhere, need to kind of camp out and have a conversation for 10 minutes and then go about their business. So the space is very much focused on those kinds of interaction points.
I mean, the space itself, the Seattle building, is focused on digital products. How do you kind of convey that through the design? Is it simply through tech, or are there other ways?
You know, I think ultimately, and this is something we try to bring to the table, ultimately it's an HBO space. HBO believes in the highest quality content and new and interesting ways to deliver that content. So whether it's the Code Labs, which it started out being 100% Code Labs, they now have different parts of their organization focused in that office. So really for us, we needed to bring together the flavor of Seattle and the real kind of the heart and soul of HBO and what they were about. The why behind HBO, great content delivered seamlessly on any device. So this space is really designed around that idea.
You mentioned just now this idea of place. Perhaps you can tell us how important it was kind of getting that notion of the Pacific Northwest into the Seattle space, and more generally, how important the sense of location is to the work that Rap Studio does.
Yeah, I think sense of location is very important. I know certainly with this group, they were very proud of being in the Pacific Northwest. We had joked early on in meetings that we were going to slap salmon stickers on the walls and call it a day. But we worked very hard to understand the things that people are proud about around the Southwest and how we can do that in a way that's a quiet backdrop, but not in your face. So for example, in the elevator lobbies you get out, we have this beautiful ceiling that's really all about texture and is an interesting color material. And it's all ropes basically that have been tied and come at different angles. You know, ropes, obviously, a strong tradition in the boating world, which the Pacific Northwest has been really built upon. So we tried to develop that. We took materiality of the Pacific Northwest, you know, the intense connection to nature, those things, and brought it into the workplace. So it's a very subtle backdrop. It's not in your face. There aren't posters of, you know, Visit Seattle. So for us, the sense of place is always important. I mean, if you think about developing the brand of a company, you know, we always talk about the brand of a place. If there's a strong sense of place that doesn't feel like every other office space that you've walked in, doesn't even feel like every other HBO office space that you've walked in, it feels like HBO Seattle through and through in a very subtle way, but a meaningful, important way.
A lot of tech companies, a lot of TV or production companies as well, tend to kind of stamp their logo all over the place. Obviously, it's present in this building, but it doesn't seem ubiquitous. How much of a say did you have in placement and size and positioning of kind of the HBO logo being stamped all over the place?
Yeah, we had a lot of say. You know, I firmly believe that you should be able to walk into an office, strip all the logos out, and still get a sense for who the company is that's working there. So we don't rely heavily on logo placement and that kind of thing. Like I said, it's more important for us to subtly kind of weave the DNA of HBO through every move and what's important to them in that space than just stamp logos everywhere. Ultimately, people want to feel like they're working in a space that's comfortable and that's useful to their process. So a lot of our spaces are feeling more like hotel lobbies, you know, like you're at home, because people work at home now. They curl up on their sofa with a laptop, so they want to be able to have that in the workplace. You don't have your family crest and the name of your dog stamped all over your house. There's no logos there. So it's a much more comfortable, much more natural, real space, you know, in developing the sense of workplace.
David Gulolo, CEO of Wrapped Studio there, speaking to Monocle's New York Bureau Chief Ed Stocker. Still to come, we'll find out how the provision of public spaces factor, or should factor, into larger scale construction projects with the architect Richard Meyer. The number 14 chair was one of the world's first mass-produced items of furniture. Designed by Austrian Michael Tonnet and introduced in 1859, the so-called coffeehouse chair sported a thrifty yet ingenious construction. Using just 6 pieces of steam-bent beechwood, 10 screws, 2 washers, and a cane seat. The genius? That, deconstructed, you could fit 36 of these simple-to-assembled numbers in a box of just 1 meter cubed, making shifting the seat a simple proposition for exporters. Despite subsequent collaborations with the likes of Mart Stamm, Ludwig Mies van der Rohe and Marcel Breuer, and a split into 2 warring factions named respectively Tonnet and Gebrüder Tonnet, the shapely number 14 is considered perhaps the most successful industrial design of the 19th century. What's more, it's still on sale today. Now, the metaphoric Section D mailbag is always open to queries and suggestions. If you have any, do get in touch by emailing our producer, Ben Rylan. He's at br@monocle.com. This is Section D on Monocle 24. Do stay tuned. Now, large-scale residential developments tend to be invariably commercial endeavours, in which architects are charged with getting the most units out of a finite amount of space. However, for the architect Richard Meyer, the way in which people react and respond to his designs is as important to the success of his art as the number of units it creates. Many of his works are already garnering iconic status, including Barcelona's Museum of Contemporary Art and the Getty Center in LA, plus the recently completed revamp of Miami's Surf Club Hotel. Monocle's very own Chiara Rumella caught up with Richard Meyer to discuss how public space played a major role in his design of the Rothschild Tower in Tel Aviv and why it should be at the forefront of any architect's vision.
I went first to Tel Aviv in 1959. Shortly after finishing architecture school, did a trip around the world, and I spent some time in Tel Aviv, you know, and looked at, from the outside, the Bauhaus buildings and much of the city, and I loved the city when I first saw it. Little did I think that so many years later I'd have an opportunity to build there, to design a building right in the heart of the city. The Rothschild Tower, as you know, is between Allenby Street and Rothschild Boulevard. I mean, it's the center of Tel Aviv. I feel, you know, very honored to be able to work there. And I was told recently, although I haven't seen anything about it, sort of as the building is being completed, the corner there is being called Meyer Corner, and it's sort of a meeting place for young people from all over Tel Aviv to come and meet their friends and hang out. And I think that's phenomenal. I love that. I love the idea. You know, it's not just a building for those who will live there, but it's really a building for everyone, for the whole city.
How much of your public building design head goes into designing residential and how you think building better residential can improve the quality of life of communities?
Every project is different. Every location is different. Every context is different. The buildings which we've done here in Manhattan, where there are three buildings on the west side adjacent to one another, really create a place. In this case, we're on the river, the Hudson River. There's a park across the street. So it's a very lively neighborhood. And it makes me both happy and proud. You know, the people sort of go there, hang out there, whether they live there or not, but they feel that it's part of their city. They have a good feeling and respect. Almost every project, we think not only about the building, but about the public space, the spaces at the ground level, which are used by everyone, residents or not. And the public space is sometimes, you know, more important than the building.
What do you think specifically is the responsibility for an architect when they do sign a project of such might in terms of immediate effect on the viewer?
For me, with every project, whether it's a residential building or a museum, the public space is of primary importance. The space that, in a sense, no one really takes responsibility for, but which is part and parcel of what we're doing. It's sort of the context and how one can enliven that context. In Barcelona, we did a museum, and there were some really deteriorated buildings in front of the museum, which were torn down, and we just created a plaza, which slopes slightly, and that plaza became a skateboard heaven. Every young person in Barcelona would bring their skateboard and skate in the plaza, and then the elderly people would come and sit there, you know, enjoy watching the young people. Well, that's not something you can plan. All you can do is sort of give the seed for something to happen. And sometimes You have no idea what that's going to be.
I'm interested in understanding, as you just said, sometimes you can't plan that kind of thing. How much can you engineer urban spaces? How much can you put your mark on them? How much is it a matter of chance, and how much is it a matter of good design?
We're always thinking about the public space, no matter what the building is or where it is, or whatever the context is, and how the open space, the ground level space, can enliven and respond to the context. Each situation is very different. You can't sort of generalize and say, you know, you do this or you do that. There's more good architecture around the world today than at any time that I can remember. There's good young architects in South America, in Asia, Europe, you know, all over. I think the general level of quality is much higher than it's ever been that I can remember.
Architect Richard Meyer there, speaking to Monocle's very own Chiara Rumela. Finally today, our mini-series looks at the Biennial of Design in Ljubljana. French designer Matali Crassett is known for her work with IKEA and the Italian furniture manufacturer Campeggi, as well as hotels from Paris to the Tunisian desert. But at Ljubljana's Design Biennial, she's taking the indoors outdoors for an exhibition called Occupying Woods. The results show what can happen when an interior and industrial designer applies her skills to a natural setting, and the impact this can have on a local community. Monocle's Guy Delaunay went for a wander in the woods to find out a little more.
There's plenty that's weird and wonderful about Bio 25, the 25th edition of the world's longest-running design biennial. But taking in the displays at Ljubljana's Museum of Architecture and Design won't even provide half the picture. There are seven so-called episodes of the biennial, projects directed by leading international designers, and six of them have major elements at far-flung sites around Slovenia.
So my project is in fact to do two types of community.
So, when Matali Crassé introduces her contribution at the museum, it's just the start of the journey. Where do we go from here? It's down to the woods, I fear. I've just overheard somebody saying every design biennial should be held in the countryside. Well, we've come to the woods for this one. This episode is called Occupying Woods, and it's been directed by Matali Crassé, and the centrepiece of it is a variation on a traditional ceramic wood-burning stove. This one installed in the middle of the forest.
In a way, forest asks you to be more humble, and the nature is strong, you know. So in this project, I wanted to make a kind of statement also, because I want this piece to be the beginning of something for this town. So it has to be artistic, it has to be strong, and it has to be welcoming also, because my concern is about how making people interacting together.
The forest at Kačuje in southern Slovenia might not seem like the natural habitat for an interior or industrial designer, but Matali Crassé has embraced the biennial's aim of celebrating the rural while using her experience of designing for hotels, furniture makers and IKEA. So a traditional ceramic stove is recast to resemble the head and upper body of a Minecraft character, welcoming local people to the woods.
I made a new typology because a stove at home is like a big block of furniture, and you are around the stove. And in this case, I just wanted the people to be into, so I created like a small character who is in fact the protector of the community. And you can cook on the shoulder, you can cook the bread in the head, and share then after the tea or whatever in their arms.
This is situated actually in a forest that people use on a...
Yeah, we used to ball here, to the dance, and also to do picnics. So it's like a reactivation of a place. So people know, and there are people who do walks every day here. So it's nice to be like that nearby. In fact, the daily routine and just to invite them to stay a little bit longer on this structure.
Among the designers who are working here, people are probably most likely to buy your works or have your works in their home because of the work that you've done with Alessi and the work that you've done with IKEA. What do you get out of this as a designer when you're going back into your work for people like that?
It gives me a lot of energy because I'm doing project for the people, in fact. So I'm not like thinking I may like this and maybe people will like also the same, but I never work like that. I really act for the people. So as soon as they are satisfied, I'm satisfied too. And it is a little bit my engine to do another project than after.
You do like to, between your commercial work, you do like to do these.
I don't have any commercial work. I am not making any difference between projects. And I don't have any client also, because it's not my way of working. It's just sharing a kind of adventure with people and then producing results. And what is interesting is that design is not anymore just to give a shape to object and space, but also to give shapes to concept, to give shape to new logic. And I really like that, you know, to have the possibility to go to make a step further and finding the things in another angle. And it's a little bit what the Biennale is offering in a way, because even if I already did things in the woods, I never did a stove in the wood. And I think it's a very nice idea, you know.
This isn't just an event for design aficionados. A large contingent of the Cachuya community is gathering around the stove in the forest. This area went through troubled times during the Second World War and for decades afterwards because of its ethnic German population. Mayor Vladimir Prebelich says the biennial project gives them a reason to feel proud.
I was really happy that this stove project, so-called, came into Cachuya, because what we really need is we have to open our minds, our eyes and everything that comes together, and to give opportunity to each other and to people who come from the other area. We try basically to start again and to build a trust between the people. And what is better to build trust on like a stove that normally brings people together, because fire was from the ancient time factor that combined people, not to divide them.
This is a real example of design providing a solution for a problem in your community.
Yes, and this was important for us because, well, I am, let's say, old-fashioned in this way. I care about the culture and high art and so on, but, you know, from the mayor point of view, things should be useful. You know, things should bring something into society, should upgrade a society, and should be understandable for the society. So this is something that is not really high above the population. It's like I don't know, Picasso or something like that. You know, it's difficult to understand to the average people. This is something that really connects in any way the whole community as such, and I think this is the added value for all of us that we live in the area.
I would like also to thank the gymnasium and secondary school of Cachuya.
So the biennial appears to have succeeded in another of its major goals, taking design beyond a specialist audience directly to places where it can make a lasting impact. Maya Vardian is the co-curator of Bio25.
The collaboration was between the Society of the Woods, between the forestiers, between civil initiatives, between the museum, school, high school, primary school. The installation there is, of course, important, but more important is the seed that we planted. For example, they have a festival of wood, which will change the concept. The school, the way the kids are dealing now with the programs, because there is a school for young carpenters. They were first in their life encountered with a designer who showed them, Metallic Crasset, what design can contribute.
It turns out it was a friend of Monocle who was relishing the biennial's al fresco shenanigans. James Taylor Foster is the European editor-at-large for Arc Daily and impressed with what he's seen from Bio25.
What this Biennale, from my reading, is trying to do is say that, look, design is everywhere. And never before, in sort of my understanding of these sort of events, has a Biennale had the guts to attempt to do that. And, you know, for me today, we saw a stove built in the middle of a wood. And the designer introduced people from the mayor to project managers to a schoolmistress. And the picture was amazing because what it demonstrated was a real non-hierarchical, non-vertical relationship between someone from the outside and people who, as I said before, would never normally engage with this kind of discourse.
So occupying woods is a hit. But how will the doyens of design feel about the next biennial challenge to face them, which involves scrambling over rocks in a subterranean cavern at midnight? You'll have to join us next week to find out. For Monocle in Cachuya, I'm Guy Delaunay.
Our special thanks to our Belgrade correspondent Guy Delaunay there, reporting from the Slovenian capital of Ljubljana, or more precisely, some woods near it. Next week, start your engine as we're taking a design-minded look at the automobile. You've been listening to Section D. I'm Josh Fallett, and goodbye for now.